The legends and stories of Florida are innumerable. 100 writers could but scratch the surface in a lifetime of endeavor telling about this land of flowers, its history, its people, and things like the dark reaches of the swamps where the owls cried mournful, the lone bull gator on an acorn ridge surrounded by wild hogs, their tushies gleaming white and sticky red, and fire in their eyes, the beautiful sand and water where the Calusa lived, the billowed sails of the Spaniard ships, colonization, building of the old fort at St. Augustine, the Seminole long-drawn-out wars, and statehood. But listen, for the wind sings its secrets to the listening ear no written word can describe.
Wherever I wander, in summer or winter, the ocean is calling me back to Florida's sand, 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 to Florida's sand, sand, sand. The wind and the ocean are calling me back to the sand, 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 to Florida's sand, sand, sand. Waves softly sparkle beneath the bright moon. Night birds are crying, return to me soon. Oh, Florida, Florida, my heart you ever, for always the love of this man is Florida's sand, 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 is Florida's sand, sand, sand. Beautiful sun-kissed land, oh, Florida sand.
Outside of a few exceptions, the rivers and lakes of Florida have kept the names given them by the Indians. They sound musical when properly pronounced. Escambia, Choctahatchee, Chattahoochee, Wakulla, Ocklockney, Owithlacoochee, Wekiva, Okeechobee, and the Suwannee, immortalized by Stephen Foster. The most beautiful river of them all is the Ocklawaha, now doomed by the Cross State Barge Canal. These are a few of the more well-known streams, but historically, the most significant river in the state is the Apalachicola, one time called the breadbasket of the South. Long before the Spanish discovered Florida, Indian villages were scattered along this waterway. The rich soil produced vegetables for the communities. The forest and river gave meat and fish. The people lived in harmony and peace. In later years, before Georgia was formed and named, slaves from the Carolinas would manage to escape, eventually making their ways to one of the villages along the Apalachicola, where they would be accepted into the tribe. Through intermarriage and prolific breeding, their numbers increased rapidly over the following several generations, and these mixed bloods would be referred to as exiles. In the year 1814, two British ships anchored in Apalachicola Bay and began discharging men and equipment. Lieutenant Colonel Nichols was officer in charge of this expedition. Their purpose: find a site upriver and build a fort to control this strategic waterway. 30 miles from the mouth of the river, they built a strong fort, fully stocking it with cannon and smaller arms. They had no qualms that this was Spanish territory. The British suddenly evacuated this fort, going downriver to waiting ships and embarkation, leaving behind to the bewilderment of the exiles a complete arsenal of powder and weaponry. Andy Jackson, after his victory at New Orleans, was appointed commanding general with jurisdiction as far south as the territorial border. From his headquarters at Nashville, Tennessee, orders were issued to Sailing Master Loomis at Mobile, Alabama, and an army officer, Colonel Clinch, stationed at a post on the Flint River. The orders stated that this Negro fort posed a threat and must be destroyed in all haste, and immediately thereafter returned the captured slaves to their rightful owners. Colonel Clinch, with troops and Indian allies, embarked downriver. By midday July 25th, 1816, his troops were deployed, the cannon in place near the stronghold. Sailing Master Loomis left Mobile Bay with two gunboats and sailed upriver to anchor just below the fort. He was at battle stations by the 25th. Word of their coming had preceded the army, so by the time of its arrival, 334 exiles had fled to the fort for safety. After a short conference, Loomis and Clinch began shelling the fort, and for 2 days they kept it up, the balls having little or no effect against the thick walls. Another conference was held and a decision reached. The gunboats would this time use hot shot or heated cannonball. The shelling was resumed. Over the walls, they lobbed the sizzling hot shot. One ball reached the powder magazine, and a resultant explosion killed 270 of the exiles outright and badly wounded most of the others. This episode brought about the First Seminole War.
Apalachicola River stood a fort, built by British engineers with cannon in each port. Protection from the slave forays that caused the exiles dread. Then they left it to the men whose color was of red. Black men came from South Carolina and Georgia filled with hope to seek this peaceful haven, no more to wear the yoke. Here the exiles lived and died, and from the heart gave thanks for this golden fruitful land along the river's banks. But the mighty force of greed reached out on every hand. This Negro fort must be destroyed. The slaves you will disband. Return them to their rightful owners. So the order said. I'm 60 miles from Georgia's line. Blunt's fort was blown to shreds. Where the Flint and Chattahoochee join and flow to sea. Colonel Clinch from here did go, and many men had he. And from the Gulf the gunboats came with Loomis in command. There's no escape from Doom Blunt's fort by water or by land. Now the fort's surrounded and the shelling has begun. Cannonballs a thudding, smoke near hides the sun. On and on for 2 full days, and before nightfall, Loomis said to Colonel Clinch, we'll give him red hot ball. White hot balls are whizzing, see the fiery way they glow. O'er the walls are bouncing, skittering to and fro. Straight into the powder magazine, this ball it went. Night was struck asunder with a hellish rain. Blood and gore and bodies torn are flying everywhere, and the stench of burning flesh fills evening air. Oh, you lost 300, woman, child, and man. You didn't ever fire one shot, nor lift an angry hand. Now the river quietly runs by where the spirits sleep, past the side of old Blunt's fort where the willers weep. From this dark deed sprung the fires that set this land aflame. It burned in the souls of the Seminole, the bitter war it came.
My grandfather, as a young man, left his home place in Alabama and took up land on Holmes Creek in North Florida. There he built his house and sired his young'un. Sweet taters, corns, beans, squash, and greens were the usual fare served at the table. Ribbon, green, and red cane gave syrup and sugar, while mayhaw, blueberry, plum, and blackberry gave jam and jelly. Following bees to their bee tree, cutting a tree down and filling wooden tubs and buckets with wild honey was a joyful event. Smoke from smoldering old rags wrapped around sticks made the bees logy, but if someone did get stung, there was always a snuff dipper in the crowd to rub snuff on the stung place. Cured meats hung from rafters in a smokehouse on loops of bear grass. Barrels of pickle meat stood against the walls and corners, and sausages hung serpentine-like from hickory poles. Holmes Creek teemed with small pike, stump knocker, warmouth, and other edible fish, and were easily caught. Flour was a luxury, and the infrequent smells of bacon were mouth-watering. Grandpa cut and rafted logs downriver to a sawmill where he'd trade them for hard money. Then he'd walk back along the river's bank. At times, he'd be away from his family for a week, camping and cooking near where he cut logs. But come noontime Saturday, all work would stop and he'd pack up, headed for home. This Saturday at noon, Grandpa gathered up his belongings, put them in a tote sack and haul buggy. Along about mid-afternoon, he came to a footbridge several hundred feet long, built above high water line and over the boggy swamp across a river to dry land on the other side. As he neared the part of the bridge that spanned the river, he heard a noise behind him. Turning around quickly, he beheld a huge panther loping down the bridge toward him. He swung the sack from his shoulder and threw it down on the bridge as close to the panther as he could and started running. The panther proceeded to rip the sack and its contents to pieces. When he'd finished, he took out after Grandpa. Grandpa was picking him up and laying him down. Upon glancing behind him, he saw the panther gaining. Off comes Grandpa's coat, and on the ground it goes. The panther stops and rips the coat to shreds. Next comes the shirt, the same treatment. By this time, Grandpa's in hollering distance of his house, and he's hollering for Grandma. He jumps a picket fence, grabs a shotgun from Grandma's hands, wheels, and as the panther leaps the fence, puts a load of buckshot in the panther's face and chest. That night, the Lord blessed Grandma with a life that would be my mother, and for several years after this foot race, Grandpa toted his gun. Years passed, Grandpa sold his homestead, resettling on a choice piece of land south of Chipley, Florida, not too far from Falling Water. There he built his home, dug his well, and sowed his seed. Off the coast of Florida, we Southerns know it well. That dirty vermin-ridden fort, it was a living hell. Tortugas was a prison camp, and torture was her fame. Good men died, good men killed, good men maimed. Union forces did command, escape was not to be. The moats were filled with tiger shark, surrounded by the sea. Still men tried, and oh, they died, and in their deaths were free. Those who fought for a southern victory. Legend, your heart it will ring. I'll sing you the ballad of Silver Springs. I'll tell of Miss Mayo and where she does sleep in the bridal chamber, way down in the deep. Her true love had gone from this enchanted land to study and to practice the just laws of man. No word from her, darling, for over a year. Her heart, it was broken, she wasted in tears. She went to Aunt Silla in late afternoon. Her death bell was knelling, the call would be soon. Aunt Silla, I pledge you, for this do I crave. Please lower me down to my watery grave. I'm there in the wild with this flower so fair, where spirit departed into the clear air. Aunt Silla prepared her and wound her with sack, and lowered her gently into the great crack. Claire Douglas returned, and straightway did go to Aunt Silla's cabin to seek Miss Mayo. No trace did he find of his true love or friend, and the sound of strange music was the voice of the wind. This legend lives ever, my story does end. They're down there together, united again, and in love's sweet embrace forever do dwell. Silvery waters that they love so well. O'er the mournful cry of the owls he weans, o'er the pale moonlit beauty of Silver Springs, their love was so pure as the waters that flow down Silver River to the Ocklawaha. First known written reference was from the book of Exodus, chapter 7, verses 20 and 21. And all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood, and the fish that was in the river died, and the river stank, and the people could not drink of the water of the river. Now, if you have been in a place stricken by the red tide, then you know that this song speaks true. The waters turn red, millions of pounds of dead fish wash ashore, entire towns become uninhabitable in the wake of this unexplained catastrophe. Jim Brevis. There's a name the gut folk dread, and he turns the waters red, leaves the fishes lying dead. Old Jim Brevis, he is red, red tide. When Jim Brevis comes to town, people know for miles around, buzzards dancing up and down, people puking on the ground, red tide. Heavy hangs the rotten stench, makes the stomach heave and wrench, eyeballs burn and noses flinch, Lord of mercy, what a stench, red tide. Where he comes from, no one knows, he just comes and then he goes, left behind the death he sows, reminded by each wind that blows, red tide, red. Christmas, the members of this country church would write their names on a slip of paper and put them in a slotted container. The box would be thoroughly shaken to mix up the names. After this ritual, each member would file by, ram his or her hand in the box, and draw out a slip. You were honor-bound to give a gift to the person whose name you drew. However, it was not mandatory to sign your name as a giver. Came Christmas Eve, the church was packed in eager anticipation of the gifts being handed out. Names were called, and the lucky person would walk to the tree, receive the gift, and return to his seat and unwrap the gift. One of the deacons, whose neck and features pitifully resembled a turkey gobbler's, openly cried of a broken heart. His gift, a bird's head and the words, to a man who needs a head and some brains. And a woman that had been saved received a liar's license. The air turned blue with her vituperations, which held the audience spellbound.
The rope into the promised land. Before he met this fateful doom, the hanging law was dead. They took him down to Rayford Town to the electric chair instead. Dropped him in the electric chair, and so while he was waiting, the warden and the county sheriff were talking and debating which one of us must throw the switch and send this man to hell. But no decision could be reached, in prison he would dwell. They took him from the electric chair. His sweat had turned to blood. They told him that his life was spared, and from his eyes did flood the salty tears of gratefulness. It happens to all men. Down on his knees, he made this vow to never sit again. Prison gang did ride by pastures that were green. A mother with her baby strode so happy and serene. Suddenly a vicious bull did charge this frightened wife, and Abraham, he jumped the fence and he saved this woman's life. Pardonful to Washington, his first name Abraham, who took a vow to never sit again while on this land. The last accounts of Washington, the day was cold and wet, was Abraham, have you kept your vow? And he said, I ain't set yet. When the moon's rays turn ghostly, the gray Spanish moss and the whippoorwill calls for his love that is lost, and the mist gently hangs o'er the water and sand, comes a mournful cry of a red and white man. Gopher John, he had understanding to copper and pale. His footsteps, they took him along every trail, and ever for honor and peace did he plead. But neither the white nor the red man did heed Gopher John. His bones now lie quietly beneath the warm sun, but his spirit, it wanders when nighttime has come through glen, glade, and forest. Deep swamps, you'll hear the echo, peace, freedom, so softly and clear, Gopher John.
Not too many years ago, you could walk along the bank of just about any flowing stream of water in Florida and soon come upon a water wheel busily turning and hear the sounds of grinding stones as they pulverize corn into grits or meal, and a wonderful smell to tantalize your nose upon entry to the mill, and the miller, proud and watchful, making adjustments as needed, his clothing, eyebrows, hands, and hair all white with meal dust. Outside the mill, empty wagons wait. Among the horses and mules, a span or two of oxen, moon-eyed and patient, chewing their cud. Women gathered closely together, swapping recipes and best cures for galloping croup, red itch, and other ills, and usually a few men peeking furtively over their shoulders just before the fruit jar's contents hit the stomach. The water flow to the wheel is diverted from the spillway, bringing quietness to the mill, for the day's grinding is done. The still warm sacks of meal going to respective vehicles, good-humored departures, and home to some mighty fine hoe cake or crackling bread. But perhaps around the bend of this spring-fed creek, or perhaps on another creek some miles away, you suddenly came upon a smaller water wheel and a shed-like structure built out of logs. The water power for this wheel is sluiced 60 yards from a pretty good-sized balling spring, and between where the sluice box ends at the top of the wheel and the head of the spring, there is a 30-foot drop. All around the structure are piles of bark and shavings and scent of ash, oak, bay, magnolia, hickory, and sassafras permeate the air. Inside the building, alongside the walls, are three 12-foot-long hollowed-out cypress logs. These vat-like objects contain assorted lengths of round, nearly perfect-sized bark-peeled wood, 3 inches in diameter. The wood is soaking in a mixture of sassafras, roots, and water. On racks overhead, hundreds of these pieces of wood are drying and seasoning. The humming of the lathe, the old but firm hands guiding chisels to sculptured beauty and artistry. The whistle of abandon ringing through the woods as he works, making household furniture. Joe Ree joyfully returning the whistle, his little feet flying, scratching the ground. All this is mote in hidden reaches of time and place. Lake Okeechobee in south central Florida, just north of the Everglades, is the second largest freshwater lake wholly within the U.S. It covers 750 square miles. On September 12th to the 17th, 1928, a hurricane sweeping out of the West Indies virtually lifted the waters from the lake bed and sent them swirling down onto the adjacent countryside. 4,000 people were drowned. In the late 20s that there come a big flood. It drowned 4,000. The grease was the mud. 'Twas nothing could withstand that great tidal wave. And the ghosts of the vanished still cry from the grave. Lord, hold back the waters of Lake Okeechobee, for Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold. When wild winds are blowing across the Okeechobee, they're calling and seeking for other poor souls. Oh, Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold. The Seminole left there in haste and with speed. Their wise words of warning were given no heed. When the waters receded, great God, what a sight! Men, women, and children turned black as night. Lord, hold back the waters
of Lake Okeechobee, for Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold. When wild winds are blowing across the Okeechobee, they're calling and seeking for other poor souls. Oh, Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold. Now Lake Okeechobee is calm and serene. The land all around it is fertile and green. But the people get fearful when the wild winds do roam. They look at the earth dam and they think of their home. Lord Hobart, the waters of Lake Okeechobee, for Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold. When wild winds are blowing across the Okeechobee, they're calling and seeking for other poor souls. Oh, Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold.
Everybody who knew him declared he had a mighty mean left leg, for he could square dance all night long, do-si-do-ing. And when that caller yelled, "First couple out and hit the floor," his double shuffle slap-slap was a sight to behold. This enviable ability plus his hard-to-get attitude put him right on top in the girls' sparking race. Through sheer jealousy and meanness, a few of his friends made it up to put one over on him. And when he was told that there was a married woman living in town who deeply admired him and whose husband only came home once a month, his vanity overruled his caution. One night he eases into town and goes to her two-story house and knocks on the door. A soft voice from upstairs bids him enter and come on up and wait in the kitchen. This he did, easily finding the designated rendezvous, and was standing looking out the back door when all of a sudden he hears a loud stamping of feet downstairs on the front porch, the opening and banging shut of the door, and a stentorian voice saying, "I am home." The screen door nearly tore off its hinges as the would-be Don Juan made his exit down the back stairs to the ground and across the yard towards a patch of woods behind the house. Scrunch goes a sound, then a thud and a moan. A clothesline had caught him right smack in the mouth. The cracker thespians who staged this little drama were simply carried away, as attested to by their howls of laughter.
Dark streamed waters run, almost strangers to the sun. Ghostly dancers early morn, paying homage to green corn. Seminole, Seminole. Bitter hatreds, they do fade. No more war cries in the glade. Basket weavers, you have turned. Many a white man's ways you've learned. Seminole, Seminole. Seminole, you noble race, there is honor in your face. You didn't ever lose your stand, this is still your golden land. Seminole, Seminole.
October evening, when the moon's rays turned ghostly, the beautiful white sand and waters of the Ocklochnie slip quietly along the river's banks till you come to within hearing distance of a sound that will make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. Ease on up to a vantage point and look across the river upon a sight few people have ever beheld. On the sand near the water's edge, you'll see 20 or more horned owls going through their courting dance. The males and females are paired off and form a circle about 15 feet in diameter. When the boss owl, standing just outside the circle, starts patting his feet up and down and making guttural sounds, the dancing begins. Each owl, keeping one foot in place, slowly turns around and around, forming a perfect bull's eye several inches deep in the sand. Then each male leaves his circle to pick up little sticks and twigs and carries them to his mate and places them all around where she stands in the light of the moon. This is a song that it's about animals. It's called Lament. The sky, the water, the sun are treasures not meant for the hand, and the manatee knows where the sweet water flows, and the whippoor never will tell. Poor me one sings in the moon's pale, that shames the place where he sleeps, and critters they wade across the slough to the glade, and the music they hear brings him weep. Treasures not meant for the hand.
manatee knows where the sweet water flows, and the whippoorwill never will tell.
To his dairy heart, he's one to feel things. Maybe too much for his own good. Anyways, how can a man get so tangled up in them old stories that rules his life? Why, to hear him tell about these old Florida crackers, You think he was listening to a man
testifying
about himself.
And he was just sort of a fisherman and hunter and music player. And his music was so strange and ethereal that when he'd sit in his little old cabin and play his homemade instrument, varmints, rabbits, and fox would actually creep up to the edge of where the lamp light shone through the cracks on the ground outside of the house. They actually would crawl up to listen to this man because his music was something that was indescribable, so strange and beautiful.
In September of 1945, Kritzer's Blitzer lifted off the airstrip of the western Pacific island of Tinian and was airborne. Destination, USA. The first act the young man performed upon leaving the airplane was to kneel down and kiss the ground. And now a powerful surge of feeling plumbed the young man to a heretofore unknown depth, and he began to weep uncomprehendingly, but in quietness. And when this had passed, he felt the same way he had as a boy.
You, Will. Come on, son. Come inside.
He felt the same way he had as a boy, standing at the foot of a hill in a sand bed, the warm rain spattering on his bare feet and on the yellow-white sand.
Come on in, Will. Come on home.
Supper time. He felt cleansed and refreshed, and he heard the call of Florida sand in the wind.
Wherever I wander in summer or winter, the ocean is calling me back to Florida sand, sand. Sand to Florida, sand, sand, sand. The wind and the ocean are calling me back through the sand, 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 Florida, sand.
When I got back in this country from the wars and was discharged in 45, I got myself an old A-model car, this old sedan, and I really had that thing fixed up where I could sleep in it, and I threw in a sack of taters and onions and about 5 gallons of old hog lard and some fish hooks, you know, salt and a few, a tin plate and a cup or something like that, and some coffee. I took off, and I think I must have dirt daubered all across this state of Florida, and I tell you, I think I hit every pig trail in every county. My goodness.
Oh, Florida, Florida. Oh,
It was primitive, too. Back in 45, you know, you could still go a lot of places. But what I was doing, and my purpose, was hunting the sources of these legends and stories that my granddaddy had told me.
We softly sparkle, breathe a bright bird. Florida, Florida, my heart's your river. Always the love of this man is Florida's sand. Sand, sand is Florida's sand. Sand, sand, beautiful sun-kissed land.
I guess I really did more work in that 2 years or a little more than chasing these things down than I've done since. But it was so much fun, and you know, I was young and foolish and friends with the grape. Once in a while it babbled my tongue, but... But we had a good time, me and Mr. Grape, all the way through. It was wonderful.
Acrefoot Johnson toted U.S. mail in the state of Florida over mighty rough trail. He strode a pace and no horse could meet, and he won his fame on account of his feet. Oh, we stood a little taller than a tie-tie tree, had legs like a pine in the scrub country, walked 65 miles in the course of a day, 3 times a week for to earn his pay. Well, he rode a little ways in a buggy one time, but then he took the fidgets and he grabbed the line. Hollered, "Oh now, mister," he said with a frown, "I'm mighty much obliged, but you're slowing me down."
The slow-moving shadows of first dark crossed the clear run and crept into the small place where the man and the boy hunkered beside a smoldering cow dung skeeter fire. They were almost mesmerized by the tiny, vari-colored flames of the burning dung, by the cacophonous music from myriads of chug-chugs, peep-peeps, gronkers, and needeeps, needeeps, by the whirl and gurgling waters, and by the plaintive cry of the phantom "Pour me one" from the distant hammer. Overhead, on the higher branches of the big oak, perched a brace of owls, silhouetted against the sky, bobbing themselves up and down, all the while chortling their eerie cry.
Oh, listen, good people, a story I'll tell of a great swamp in Florida, a place called Tate's Hell. 140 square watery miles with millions of skeeters and big yeller flies. And where all about the moccasins lie, with glittering death in their beady eye, where bull gators bellow and panthers squall. Now this is a place to be shunned by all. Old Tate left Sumatra along about dark, He had his two big dogs, a puppy named Spark, an old long-drum shotgun, a sharp Barlow knife. That panther would sure have the chase of his life. A little past moondown, the dog struck the scent. Through bramble and tie-tie, a running Tate went. For hours and hours, until it was dawn, then Tate knew that he was a long way from home. He blowed through his gun barrel. The dogs did not hear. The panther had killed him. Now Tate felt fear. The sun was not shining. The mist it was thick. Oh, Lordy, Tate hollered, I'm lost at the creek. He leaned back to rest and his eyes did not see. The big rattler struck him above the bent knee. The lick was so hard that a sprawling he fell. This was the beginning of Pearl Tate's hell. He opened his Barlow and he grabbed him some moss. A cut he made one way, another across. He wrapped his leg tightly and tied it with string. Then sickness came on him. His body turned green. When Tate was discovered, these words he did tell. My name is Old Tate, boys, I've just been in hell. These few spoken words were the last that he said. His spirit had left him. Old Tate, he was dead. No man can dispute this legend of yore, how Tate lived a full week and 5 days more, and somehow crawled out close to Caravel from the deep ghostly swamp that we know as Tate's Hell.
The boy and the man walked away from the sun through virgin woods and over ground that only nature had seeded. They came upon a cattle trail that meandered around the edge of a cedar grove where huge trees towered above grotesque formations of lime rock. The boy shuddered, and the man, observing this, reached out to take the boy's hand.
And if I jumped or something, he was always there to put a hand or finger or a wink or something. And we went everywhere, and he was so patient and so warm. And he knew my thoughts, and I knew pretty much his.
The long hours passed swiftly to the boy, for the man told him innumerable stories about Florida. Told how grave danger existed among gallberry bushes, tall as the eye and thick as a canebrake. A place where the wild hog lairs, where man is dareful to go to encounter these wraith-like descendants of the Russian boar, whose tushes gleam white and sticky red, with fire in their eyes and slobber running down their chomping jowls.
There's a wild hog in Gulf Hammock. I don't wish on any man. My blood knows his hurtful tushes, dark to brown and yellow sand. There he stood, his red eyes burning, slobber running down his jaw. Never seen a sight so fearful, chill me to my very maw. Well, times at night, I gets to thinking,
and the shivers cold my spine. I walks out into that moonlight, that old hog's still on my mind. There's a wild hog in Gulf Hammock I don't wish on any man. My blood knows his hurtful touches, dark the brown and yellow sand. Dark the brown and yellow sand, a wild hog. I was, I think, 6 years old. I was sick out on the front porch of my granddaddy's house, and it was cold. The geese were almost running into the top of the house. That's how socked in it was. But anyway, I was feverish, and I heard this passionate calling thing. It sounded to me like that these things were just calling me, come on, go, 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 go. But anyway, they passed over, and I wanted to go with them. So I made up a little old song called Away O-E, and the O-E was supposed to be the echo to Away.
Away O-E, I'll sing a lilting song, for my step is light and my heart has wing. Away we I'll sing, away we. Away we I'll love the earth, the sea, the people and our God above. Away we I'll love, away we. When in my final sleep I trust my soul departs into the heavens deep, for I'll have done my best to weigh away, 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 away.
That's where a lot of this started. Apparently I had some of it, was born in me, you know, like some people say, well, it was just natural for him to do things like that. I'm speaking about the love of Florida and trying to tell the Florida story and song primarily. But coming up, you know, from the time of remembrances, my grandfather, he used to bring 25-cent harmonicas, old American Aces, made by the Horner Company. And they were good harps back in those days, too, for a quarter. And, of course, the bestest one was the old standby. That cost 50 cents. I only got a couple of those, but I wore out a lot of American Ace harmonicas. And my grandfather was musically inclined. He used to go around. He couldn't sing. In fact, I don't think I ever heard him sing a word. He'd just say, bam, blam, blam, bam, bam, blam, bam, bam.
Where the dark-stringed waters run, almost strangers to the sun, ghostly dancers early morn, paying homage to green corn, Seminole, Seminole. Yeah. bitter hatreds they do fade. No more war cries in the glade. Basket weavers you have turned. Many a white man's ways you've learned. Seminole, Seminole.
I guess my granddad, he wanted to let me see some of the things that he had seen. So he closed up his lathe for water powered that he turned out these beautiful pieces of furniture with the chisel, and just hand chiseled, and his own artistry, his old gnarled beautiful hands. We closed it up, swept it, diverted the water so everything was safe, and locked the shed, and we just took off. We rode the train and to River Junction and started walking down the Apalachicola River.
On the Apalachicola River stood a fort, built by British engineers with cannon in each port. Protection from the slave raids that caused the exiles dread. Then they left it to the men whose color was red. Black men came from South Carolina and Georgia filled with hope to seek this peaceful haven, no more to wear the yoke. Here the exiles lived and died from the heart gave thanks for this golden fruitful land along the river's banks.
We went from there through the big scrub, and I learned so much about so many things.
It was in the late 20s that there come a buffalo. It drowned at 4,000 degrees was. It was nothing could withstand that great tidal wind, and the ghosts of the vanished still cry from the grave. Lord, hold back the waters of Lake Okeechobee. When the wild winds are blowing across the Okeechobee, they're calling and seeking for other poor souls. Oh, Lake Okeechobee's blue waters are cold.
The man and the boy took the westbound train out of Jacksonville. Now the man had taken on a sort of restlessness in his manner towards the boy. His conversation to the boy was tormented. He talked about gourd and cornstalk fiddles he had made the boy, how the boy's natural talent came forth on his first mouth harp, of the pleasure the boy brought him through his playing of church songs on his harp, and how they walked through the woods to the little church at Blue Pond, where they would pump the pressure lanterns with their crumbly mantles and clean the globes and light the lanterns for the evening services. The man told how there was no tongue could tell of his love for the boy. The boy's mother and new stepfather were waiting at the depot and watched the grandfather point out the boy's mother.
That's when he really, his heart was broken, pulling into the station there at Chipley. When the train stopped, he took me to the steps and helped me down the steps and pointed over to people that were waiting for me, and he just walked, turned around, walked back through the coach, out the back end, and just went on out of my life. Soul is a hawk. I am but returned from the place the Indians call land, where the wind is born. Into the quiet and lonely spaces of the upper skies soar I. The beauty of Florida below me is thermal air currents send their songs through my wing feathers. And I float in ever-widening circles, yellow eyes piercing in rapture, the blues, the golds, the orange and faint pinks of sunset. And I see in the far, far distance my haven, the majestic old dead tree on whose limbs I find my soul as a hawk.
Captured under flag of truce and confined within the old Fort Castillo de San Marcos at St. Augustine in late 1837, Osceola knew that for him the sands of time had run their course. Wildcat, Osceola's most trusted friend, who also had been taken under this flag of white, pleaded with Osceola to escape the fort with him, but Osceola refused. Late one night, with Osceola's final instructions to his people burning in his heart, Cocuchi slithered through a tiny air vent to the ground outside the fort. The spitting snarl of a wildcat hushed the night sounds momentarily. The Seminole War would continue. Osceola was transported from the old fort to Fort Moultrie, South Carolina. There, avoiding all nourishment and medicines to his quincy-racked body, he soon gave up the ghost. His head was severed from his torso, and his remains were buried on Sullivan's Island, where they lay until 1966. Osceola's bones now rest in an unmarked grave somewhere in the land of flowers he so dearly loved. Estahadki Holowagas Loxi Ojas.
St. Augustine, Chief Osceola wept for his people and his golden land. His body had not slept in Wildcat said, "Oh chief, I beg you go with me to stand against our mortal foe." But Osceola raised his proud head high, said, "Do this ere I die, Wildcat brother, to the grassy waters. Take the Seminole there. No white man can invade to leave you lying dead and cold. I shall not live among such evil men who mock the sign of truce, this flag of white, and on not their given sacred word. My name will be the light that burns in every warrior's soul. In dark and hidden reaches, they will never drive us from our land, nor drain our blood like leeches. My spirit walks with those of you who die, and those of you who always will remain upon this blood-stained, blessed, flowered land, must fight and fight again." the town of Cedar Key lived a man so proud and free. Nature lent him many secrets of her ways. Lend him how to know the fires burning in the critter's eyes, pulled his heart with restless music, sad and gay. Creatures stirring in the night stopped to listen with no fright to Cush Holston as he sang and played. Fingers dancing on the strings, Ross and Love made fiddle ring, filled the air so softly with strange music. Got arrested, put in jail, caged up this mind at will, as a lordly hornowl wanting to be free. Come time to turn him go, his face so full of woe, people broke his heart with thoughtless mockery. Took his gun and he did go to a place where no one knows, vanished like the cold mist leaves river sand. Gone back to nature's own, still living free alone, lonely is the mournful cry of the sad man. Willow the wisp was he, living so proud and free, Cush Holston's gone back to nature's ways. She will no secrets tell of Cush and where he lives. Willow the wisp, he will ever remain.
People are acquainted with this expression, "You ain't got no more sense than God give a billy goat." The recipient of this compliment should feel proud, because a billy goat's the smartest animal to be found anywhere. Naturally, a goat baby has to be weaned like any other baby. Even baby chicks have to be taught to peck and scratch. But once a goat's off that white stuff, a goat is surety against intruders. No sane person or varmint will stay very long in a yard where a full-grown billy goat's running around loose. In some ways, a goat's smarter than a lot of people. And to prove a point, ponder this little ditty. Oh, the goat feeds east to the morning sun. The goat feeds west at the turn. Well, the sun never shines on that sweet goat's behind, for it's tender and likely to burn. Walk along the beaches during the daytime. You'll see a multitude of sunburned humans. Viva El Sol. And here's something for the wives' ears only. If you treasure your plants, flowers, and shrubbery, don't let your husband buy a billy goat. Find yourself a well-preserved hollow log. Cut off a 3-foot section, clean and scrape the inside till it's smooth. Stretch a wetted piece of thin hide over one end, tacking it taut. Make a small hole in the center of the hide. Through this hole, draw a strong cotton cord knotted at one end. Fire a hunk of rosin from an old pine and thoroughly rosin your string. You have fashioned a dumb bull. Reach inside with thumb and forefinger, lightly pinch the cord, slide your fingers back along it towards the open end. With a little practice, you can get some of the most god-awful sounds out of this contraption you've ever heard. One of these instruments was stealthily placed under an isolated primitive Negro church, and a long cord run from the dumb bull to a place of concealment beneath a small bridge some 50 yards away. One Sunday night, the church was crowded and sure enough rocking. By the time the prankster sneaked under the bridge, the preacher was wound up and the amens, uh-huhs, and yes, lords fired his enthusiasm. The prankster stood up in the ditch to watch as a most adept dumb buller climbed up on the bridge and tightened the line. He stroked the string, and from under the church came a low moan. Sounds inside the church diminish somewhat as heads turn, peering toward the open door. Seeing nothing, apprehensively they settle down again. Suddenly, a terrifying series of floor-shaking, gasping groans fill the church. Complete silence follows. The artist caresses a string. Unearthly music soars to crescendo. Mad exodus to a jammed doorway. Sash, frame, and glass explode outward as a mass of hurtling humanity fly out windows. Whooshing sounds of unofficial world record sprinters clearing the ditch. Hysterical hyena-like laughter from under the bridge.
Lawless men, they were to blame. From the Georgia line they came. Burning, killing, stealing slaves from the Seminole Indian breeze. Major Dade and his 100, they were marching along. By the edge of a thick swamp, it was shortly past dawn. Through scrub and palmetto, their harness did ring. They were marching from Tampa on the way to Fort Keene. Oh, the sun's rays are burning. Dade's temper was short. His scout had deserted somewhere to the north. The men had a feeling the land was too quiet. They held their hands tightly. Their eyes showed their fight. Well, it came of a sudden, that wild cry of praise from the screaming throats of the Seminole breeze. Black smoke, thudding bullets from Indian guns. I'll tell you, the day massacre had begun. Major Dade, he fell first with a deep mortal wound. 'Twas from Jumper's rifle that he met his doom. His men were all killed without mercy or plea. This legend lives ever in our history. Now the land is all serene. There's a marker at the scene where Major Dade sleeps among his 100 men.
Recollections of the old home place remain vivid. In the large rambling house on the crest of a long hill, the lengthy hallways and porches, the two huge peach trees, pink with blossom and heavy laden with luscious drippy peaches, the alligator pear tree near the corn crib and barn, the stately old black walnut, the fig and the plum with their nectar of the god's fruit, the self-player piano and its 100 rolls of delight, the large dining table next to the kitchen where it seemed natural to say grace before each meal, the deep well of pure and clear water with its pulley, rope, and bucket, the sweet taters laying in their pine straw-lined mounds of earth with a little door you could stick your arm in and pull out taters when you were mine to. Seldom mentioned things, a tree sawed down that fell on Grandpa's youngest, squashing him to a pup, of broken marriages and daughters and their children returning to a haven of love, earthy things, the outhouse with its Montgomery Ward and Sears Roebuck catalogs that were both useful and entertaining, the song fests, candy pullings, peanut ballings, and square dances, and soap-making time out in the backyard, slipping quietly through briar patches, slingshot poised, tense to a jumping point at the slightest sound or movement, looking for limpid-eyed rabbits in their nests, listening to black snakes whistling their mating calls and going to cut gallberry bushes and broom sage for sweepers, storytelling around the fire. About a quarter of a mile to the southeast of where we lived stood a small unpainted house that had love apple vines growing all over the porch. In this house lived an old woman, and her pleasure after chores was to sit on the porch in her rocker and rock and hum, hum and rock. One early afternoon she was rocking away when all at once she sees a great big king snake slither up on the porch and start crawling through the door into the house. She jumps out of her rocker, grabs a brush broom, and chases the snake out of the house and into the yard. She goes back and sits down in her rocker, squirms to a comfortable sit, and starts rocking and humming. Before she could get in high gear, that king snake was back on the porch headed through the door. Again, she grabs a broom, sweeps him back into the yard, and tries to run him out the gate, but the snake bypasses her and scoots into the house. By this time, her curiosity is aroused, so she decides to let the snake have his way. She follows the snake into the house and watches. The king snake crawls into the bedroom, goes under the bed and into a box that's about half full of quilting scraps. The box begins to bump around on the floor, and the old woman hears sounds of thrashing noises, then quiet. Out from under the bed comes his king snake, dragging a dead 6-foot rattlesnake. The house is remembered, for it was in this house a boy once beat broom straws on the fiddle strings as a fiddler played over the hills and far away. But what about this old woman? What were her thoughts as she sat on her porch rocking and humming her little songs? What sorrows, what loves, and what secrets were hidden in her heart? She has long since departed this life. So has the love apple vine she planted and the house. Even her name is lost, and only a small thread of memory keeps an old woman from disappearing into the silent past, forgotten. The old home place is gone, too. Weeds, cockleburrs, and erosion bear witness to its passing.
Deep in the glade where the wild deer wade and play neath a ghost-like moon, soft misty rain damps the sawgrass plain, a night bird answers a loon. Swamp singers tell of how lost in a spell and the beauty of nature's way, a last dying squeak from the claw and beak, a silent owl clutches its prey. Wild as a hog in a dark hammock bog, fire in the eye shows his mien. in mangrove trees grown swarming bees, and snowy egrets in preen. This precious land of muck, sawgrass, sand, dies with more creatures each dawn. Their song only heard in the moan of the wind, for the rain is over and gone.
Ooh.